Hey, Dan.
Ah.
Ah, Dave.
Ah.
Whoa. I told you to project, but not quite like that. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. My name is Sam. With me is Dan and Dave, as I suggested, and we received an email from Aristotle, of all people.
Is it really Aristotle?
I'm sure, because who lies on the internet?
Nobody.
Yeah, all right. And Aristotle writes this incredibly prescient and understandable question that I think we should all think about.
Okay.
Why do you defend the crimes against humanity committed by Islamists by insisting that all religions are the same?
Well, I think if Islamists want to play an adult card game, they should be as welcome to do it as anybody. Oh, crimes. I'm sorry, guys. Yeah. Go ahead. My bad.
Well, that joke is a crime. Jeez. Oh, boy.
There's been a lot of that.
I won't defend it. Don't worry.
Did I say erudite? I'm sorry. I meant stupid. Wow.
What is he even trying to get at here? Like, what?
I mean, I absolutely know what he's talking about. I mean, there's those people who were bombing abortion clinics in 1981. They were called the Army of God. There's that Hutari people who apparently had more arms than all of the people in the United States arrested for terrorism and other in other places combined. There's the Army of the Lord or the Christian or the Lord's
Resistance.
Resistance
Army.
In Uganda. There's the Covenant, the sort of an arm of the Lord, Defensive Action, the Montana Freemen. Wow. So many Islamic terrorist groups out there. Oh, wait.
Well, and more importantly, just because let's just grant him that the Islamic terrorist groups are a bigger threat than any other group in the world right now. For sake of argument, grant that. Just because Islamic groups are out there and they're dangerous does not invalidate the danger of other groups, right?
Right.
Like, you can't say, like, you know, huh, we might talk about some terrible things that Christians are doing. His answer is, Islam's doing worse. Huh?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they're not both.
Okay, yes, bad. That's nice.
This is one of those things where this is precisely why I kind of wanted to change the opinion or sort of the editorial way we approach Ask an Atheist. Because if your concern, if your view of the world is based upon a very dominionist and a very conservative concept of American power projection, you are absolutely right. Islam is the worst thing ever to happen to us because that's apparently where we're doing most of our power projection, and those apparently are the people we're fighting the most. However, if you look at the world and, like, death tolls and you know, actual terrorism, where terrorism is really a thing, it's not just the Muslims. It's almost everybody across the board. There's Buddhist terrorism. There's Christian terrorism. There's the Hindutva folks in India. It's all over the place across the board.
We don't spend a lot of time talking about Amish.
We don't talk about Amish terrorism. That's true. What I was going to say, we don't talk about, there's not a lot of Baha'i terrorism out there,
right,
as far as I know. But I may be wrong. Why do we say they're all the same? Because they are. Because anytime any religion gets a little bit of power, just a little bit of power, a little bit of political power, a little bit of way to force their morality on you, it's the slippery slope. Slippery slope is not a logical fallacy when people are actually doing it. We're not talking about math. We're talking about people doing things. The history. Take a look at it. Little mad.
I think Sam is decompressing now.
There's few statements that I receive as an atheist that make me question the intelligence or the neuronal capacity of the person asking that question,
mm-hmm,
than a question like that one. It's like, have you seen the news? Are you literate?
Right.
I mean, even Pascal's wager. Okay, you've cracked open a book.
Yeah. keep going.
Yeah.
Crack
yeah.
some more.
Do more of that, and I think we'll be okay. But this one is I paid attention to CNN News for 10 minutes and decided Islam is the worst thing ever.
Yeah. Well, and I'm getting more and more frustrated with the pity Olympics, with the, you may be talking about this, but you should be paying attention to what I care about.
Yeah.
Right.
Because that's clearly more important than anything going else in the world.
And I say this with the full knowledge that the person asking this question, that Aristotle here, is probably an atheist. he probably, because it's going to be he probably agrees with us on the God thing. But like I've said, just because you're an atheist isn't like you automatically get a postdoctorate degree.
Yeah.
You know, it's blah. It's an easy decision to make.
Oh. I can't remember who said it, but somebody said, you know, don't give me too much credit for figuring out the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And I'd say if you came, this is directed more towards Aristotle. If you came to the conclusion of atheism through empirical study and logical thought processes and skepticism, continue.
Right.
Certainly continue. And you may find that what you previously thought about defending the crimes against humanity committed by Islamists may have been incorrect.
Yeah.
I think it's important as honest skeptics for all of us to apply that same level of skepticism to ourselves and to the things that we think about and to our assertions, even if we've already made them.
Right. And also, I think if you were to do, I don't know, a statistical analysis of the conversations that we've had on Ask an Atheist over the last 6 months, and you'd see the amount of time we spent talking about, like ISIS and what went on in Australia and what went on in France versus us talking about what's going on in Uganda. I think you'll find we're actually talking about the extreme Islam stuff more because it is in the news and it is what people is thinking about. And I think it's necessary to talk about it.
Yeah. We have these beheadings and these kidnappings and these lashings for just talking.
It is important. It is something that needs to be talked about, and I think it is something that essentially needs to be dealt with, in one way or another. So I'm not going to say it isn't a problem, but I'm going to say the problem isn't Islam. As an atheist and as an anti-theist, the problem is religion.
And one little final thing I want to put a cap on this is:
all right,
we don't say all religions are the same. I don't believe we've ever said that.
No.
I kind of do.
Well, you
kind
of did a minute ago.
Wow.
Yeah. I kind of do. I think if you take any religion of any ideology and put it in a similar substrate, you end up with something that looks very much the same. The serial numbers are different. The adjectives you use are different. But the power structure, the pyramid, all tends to look the same. Because I don't think it's an effect of religion. I think it's an effect of human psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And and which is just another reason why this whole God thing is kind of silly, because if you can explain all of this with psychology, what's the God for?
Right.
Mm.
Maybe it doesn't even necessarily have to be a religion, but an ideology in general. I mean,
we've
seen numerous ideologies that were non-religious come to horrible conclusions and treatments of their people.
Yeah, I'm under no illusion that getting rid of religion, if such a thing were possible, which I'm not certain it is, would solve the problems that we talk about in Ask an Atheist. I'm actually almost 100% certain that they won't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because the people who make these sorts of decisions will just retreat to other places. But right now, 2015, on Earth, religion is the armor that dogma wears. This is where you find dogma. Moving on to something a little less dumb. Andrew from Down Under writes, who do you give thanks to on Thanksgiving? This is an interesting question. Kind of a weird one, because you get that sense that if a Christian were to ask you this question, the answer they'd expect, the God's not dead answer, would be me, of course. I thank me.
I thank Sam. He's the one who fries the turkey.
Well, I thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to fry a turkey. Because
so much fun.
Frying a turkey in November, I was like, yeah, you're cooking for a bunch of people. Frying a turkey in August, people look at you funny.
They do.
Yeah.
We did in March last year.
Shh. Secret.
I would say I probably thank whoever invited me to the gathering.
Yeah.
First and foremost. And if I wasn't invited to anything, then I have probably forgotten that it's Thanksgiving. But I think I would thank my hosts and then all of those that contributed food and camaraderie. And I mean, I thank my friends and my family, and sort of in a more, impersonal way, I like to express some sort of gratitude for the people who put in the work, for the farmers that grew the vegetables and raised the livestock, and even though it's probably on the edge of woo-woo for an atheist, I like to extend a little bit of gratitude for the animals and plants that gave their lives so that we could eat them. Not that they did it willingly, but, you know, I'm grateful anyway.
What was that one comic, a ball of meat with a tiny head?
Yeah. Yes.
If I can get a little sappy for a minute on this one, too. I live far away from my family. Almost everybody I'm related to lives in the Chicagoland area, and I'm out here. And so Thanksgiving is usually spent with my friends and my adoptive family, if you will. And I'm always thankful that when we get together and we have this party, that I have this group of people that have decided to hang out with each other on a holiday, that I have these people to interact with, to joke with, to laugh with, to go through weird things with. I'm really thankful for that, and that's really important to me. Thanksgiving is by far my favorite holiday because it's really easy to focus on the people around you. It has a very humanistic feel to me. I mean, yeah, okay, we can talk about how Thanksgiving became a political holiday in the United States. It's not without its problems. Don't get me wrong. But it's the easiest one to repurpose versus, the zombie guy. Or, so it's about celebrating the birth of this guy, so we give each other gifts and chop down trees. It's the least obviously religious of the holidays that are popular in the United States.
Or the death of this guy. Please bite the head off this rabbit.
Yes.
But I really like chopping down trees for holidays. That's one of my favorite things.
You should probably get to some news. An old German law still on the books bans dancing and loud music over Easter weekend. 13 of the 16 states in Germany have some variation of the law, also known as Tanzverbot, which looks like Tanzerbot to me. Taserbot. I'm going to go Taserbot. Which prohibits people from public dancing from the Thursday before Easter to the Monday after. Some groups are pushing to have the laws cut back to reflect the secularization of the German government. One critic says he doesn't want to be told how to organize his own days. Well, get down with your bad self.
I mean, that seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm wondering, do they send the Taserbot after people who get loud and dance?
Berserk, dancing, not at all, chocolate bunnies. Yeah.
Cease your rhythmic undulations. You have 10 seconds. You have 9 seconds.
Is a robot of John Lithgow and Footloose?
I was thinking of it might be a Dalek designed in Arizona. It's kind of what I was thinking. But
I just think it's fascinating that
expatriate.
I just think it's fascinating because, you know, forgive me my sort of, you know, American belly button staring, but it just, I never really thought about, you know, we have blue laws here, but of course other countries have blue laws as well. These laws are just kind of sitting on the books. The chances are for them, they've been sitting there since 1422.
Yeah.
You know, and the idea is like, no dancing, no loud music over Easter weekend. Why?
Well, yeah,
it's interesting that they, I mean, if this law is, you know, sitting around since 1422, that this law about loud music pertains only to acoustic instruments with no ability to actually amplify them.
So KMFDM's okay then, is what you're saying. Right on.
Yeah. Hey, it is a drug against war.
It is. So we got the weird laws here in the United States where you're not allowed to dance with a fish on Sunday in Pittsburgh
or not allowed to shoot a rabbit from the side of a, or from out the window of a car.
I was making it up. Is that a real
one? Something.
I think you can't ride an ugly horse down the city streets on Sunday in Seattle. I think that's a thing.
I believe in Florida you cannot handcuff alligators to fire hydrants.
What qualifies as an ugly horse? I'm speaking as somebody who worked at a racetrack. What makes a horse ugly?
Are you trying to say that a horse is a horse? Of course.
Of course.
Why?
Did we break Dan's sense of humor?
We did.
I am proud.
Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal announced his support for a broad-reaching religious freedom bill that the state legislature is considering. The bill in question would give businesses the right to refuse to recognize same-sex marriages and withhold benefits legally required for opposite-sex married couples. In a written statement, Jindal's office said it was common-sense bills that would prevent adverse treatment from the state based on religious beliefs regarding marriage. The short form is, I want to run for president. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me.
Yeah.
Now, we could go on. We could go on about this because, obviously the Indiana bill that's passed, which they are really desperately trying to backpedal without actually backpedaling. No, this doesn't mean that we hate on gay people, except it totally means that we hate on gay people.
Right. The people who wrote the bill made clear statements that this is, no, really, this is what we meant.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everyone else is like, we didn't mean that. What?
We're not anti-gay. It's just that we think gays are worse people than the rest of us.
Well, yikes.
And Bobby Jindal, never-ending source of unintentional comedy.
My favorite thing about Bobby Jindal, and this has not, and it's not as political as it sounds, and it absolutely is in line with Ask an Atheist by any editorial stance you want to take, is he said in a speech that we should end volcano research. We should stop giving money to volcano research in the United States because volcanoes aren't really a thing that happened in the United States. That, as soon as I read that, I walked outside my front door of my house, looked at my house, turned my head about 8 degrees, and saw something that was called a decade volcano. A decade volcano is one that's kind of important and might kill a lot of people. It's directly on the Pacific Rim. It's Mount Rainier. They're in the continent. Like, you could talk about Alaska. You could talk about Hawaii. It's in the continental United States. This is the country you want to run, dude.
Yeah. If you've never been to the Western Washington area, go online, look up a picture of Mount Rainier. It is huge. It is overlooking the entire state.
Yeah. I was on the size of Mount Rainier. I was driving by Mount Rainier one day. I was not the driver. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done the math. But I was just curious about the size of Mount Rainier because it's huge. It's a giant volcano.
It's in my county.
And we did some quick math, giving each person on Earth roughly 2 cubic feet for body displacement of volume, and found that the volume of Mount Rainier is larger than a pile of all human beings on Earth.
Wow.
That's creepy.
It's big, right?
I mean, it's large, but it's also creepy that you would do that.
We're just curious, just curious. Well, it started with the idea of quelling it by throwing people into the volcano, but it's a big volcano.
Yeah,
How many would it take?
Ask, what are your plans? Jeez.
It just gives you a good sense of how big this mountain is. It's bigger than all the humans combined.
It is huge. You can be on the mountain without realizing you're on the mountain. It's that kind of thing.
And when you look at that speech, the complaint about it, he was saying that we are spending $5 million a year on volcano watching. Yeah. That's not very much money.
Not
B,
enough.
Very important.
Yeah.
So very quickly, I would like to thank Scott from Langley, British Columbia. Hey, how you doing, Scott? For meeting Peggy's Challenge. Peggy's Challenge is the challenge for listeners of Ask an Atheist. To keep the lights on, if you would like to participate in Peggy's Challenge, you go to askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side. It'll take you right to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes directly towards show production. And we like producing shows, of course. I mean, clearly.
We're still here.
Yeah. Can't you tell? This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about humanist celebrants in Washington State Capitol tomorrow.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide $1 bajillion in your locker.
Wow, $1 bajillion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Hey, podcast listeners.
Did you know that Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey is a radio show?
Radio waves and everything.
If you know of a radio station that could benefit from Ask an Atheist in your area, let us know.
And don't forget to let the station know you'd love to hear us.
So to help us humanize atheists in mass media, email us at stations@askanatheist.tv.
Experience Mile High Humanism at the annual conference of the American Humanist Association, May 7th through 10th in Denver, Colorado. Network with chapter leaders, become a trained humanist celebrant, and hear from Lawrence Krauss, Marcy Hamilton, writers from The Onion, and more. Camp Quest is providing childcare, so bring the kids. High school and college students qualify for reduced registration fees. Go to conference.americanhumanist.org and register today.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842, toll-free nationwide. That is our voicemail number. Anyway, we have a very interesting interview, a very local interview, important stuff happening in Washington State this week. Robert Ray joins us by phone. He is back with us today talking about his upcoming invocation at the Washington State Legislature as a secular humanist celebrant. How are you doing today, Robert?
Good, Sam. How about yourself?
Not too bad at all. So how were you selected to give a congressional invocation?
Well, originally I sent a letter out to my local representatives, Scott and Christensen, and basically got ignored. But I decided, it was fun. So a couple weeks later, I decided to reach out to the nearest Democratic senator or representative, which was June Robinson out of Everett.
Okay.
And a couple days later, her staff member wrote back and said that she would love to endorse me for the next session.
Oh, cool.
So what is the endorsement? So you got the endorsement from, you had to get outside of your local representative to get the endorsement, but you got it. What does endorsement mean in this context?
Well, that means she is sponsoring me to give the invocation. Basically, anybody that gives an invocation has to be invited. So... Hmm. And so basically she has issued an invite to me to give a secular humanist invocation. And in fact, she wrote back to me and said, I put your name forward to the House staff in the spirit of respect, openness, and diversity.
Oh.
Which I thought was really cool.
That was neat. So did they just put your name in a bin and you won the braying at the House lottery? Or how did this work out?
Not exactly. So anybody that gets... invited gets put on the list, and then they work out on the calendar when you can show up and when they want you there. So as far as I understand, anybody that gets invited gets to give one.
Oh, nice. So do you, to your best of your knowledge, do you know if you're the first person to give a non-religious invocation, or has this happened before at the state level here?
I don't think anything like this has happened at the state level. I did some research and couldn't find one, but that doesn't mean it hasn't happened.
Well, that's got to be exciting.
Yeah, it is, kind of.
I know Washington State's put a lot of their stuff online, so that, you know, if you couldn't find it, there's a good chance that if it happened, it was quite a while ago.
Right. So, yeah, and I went through lots of agendas looking for it, and I never found one. So.
What fun.
Yes, sorry. As much as I love reading legal documents, it gets boring after a couple hours.
That sounds like something that could impede you a bit. Along those lines, what kind of problems have you had, or have you had any problems getting this permission or getting to have this honor?
Well, getting in wasn't a really big deal aside from being ignored by my local representatives. But the only thing that really has happened was I got pushed back for a month because they were so busy. They went pro forma, which means they weren't going to have an invocation for a while. Hmm. So and they decided to do that on the day I was giving the invocation. So I'm like, okay, whatever. I'll just do it the month after, which turns out to be a stroke of luck because, tomorrow is actually Jefferson's birthday.
Hey.
Oh, fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wasn't originally going to throw a quote in because I was going to just do my own words, but with it being Jefferson's birthday, I had to throw in a Jefferson quote.
I think pro forma is legalese for not trying too hard.
Yeah.
So have you heard of any dissent, or do you expect any dissenters, and how would you deal with them if there were?
I haven't heard any dissent so far, but then this hasn't been very widely publicized. And as far as dealing with it, you know, it's our right to give invocations wherever invocations are given. So, and if they don't like it, you know, they can just get over it.
Yeah, that's true nationally, but it's also, it's also kind of especially true in Washington because it's, the Washington State Constitution has like extra special stuff about this kind of thing in it as well. I'm kind of wondering, I'm going to be there, and it is tomorrow, you said at 10 a.m.?
10 a.m., yes.
Yeah, so down in Olympia, I plan on being there, and I'll be very interested to see, usually when somebody decides to, protest one of these things, they'll usually stand up or turn around, or my favorite was this one time, like very early days, like 2006 when I started getting interested in atheism, I saw somebody do a Hindu invocation at the house in Washington, D.C., and then there were these apparently staffers and actual congresspeople went up into the gallery and basically became, Jesus Cybermen. Jesus is Lord. Jesus saves all.
I remember reading about that.
Yeah. Now, well, while I would very much like this to go off without a hitch, I think there might be advantages if we got some attention that way. What's your opinion there?
Absolutely. If we get a little attention by someone protesting us, I'm all for it. I mean, that's part of why I do this, is to make sure that we get the humanist point of view out there.
Right.
And the more publicity we get, the better off we are.
So considering sort of the humanist point of view on this, I know that we talk about this, quite a bit off the air, but if you'd like to say on the air, what exactly is our motivation for wanting to do this? Why should atheists or humanists or secularists in general be interested in giving an invocation here in what is usually a prayer?
Well, from a humanist point of view, it is specifically so that we can put out our point of view via this medium, right? We don't get this very often, so it's a great opportunity to promote the ideas of humanism. However, from a secularist point of view, which is slightly different, it is a way to kind of stab back at something that we view as partially unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of a two-prong effect. If we get in, great, we get to spread humanism. If not, then we get to fight back and say, this is unfair because you're not letting us in.
Right. And, this is also in the context of the stuff that Robert and I have both been working on, which is that whole In God We Trust America thing that happened, that's happened here and in Vancouver. The legislature has been opened up as a front in this ideological battle, mm-hmm. If I may put it in such striking terms.
So does that mean that there is a place for we're trying to make a point that, we'd rather nobody did these sort of invocations or prayer. That would be the preferred way of going about it. But if they're going to invite one, they're going to invite all, right? So
right.
Is there a place for like the real trolling version of these where people are like just going all out trying to be offensive?
Might this be the Satanist question?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this would be, that would be the position of the Temple of Satan, which they are really good at that.
They are.
So I imagine we might actually see them in there next year because maybe I have opened a door that wasn't open.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's probably a very good. I think so. It's funny what they're up to. I actually got an email from them. I didn't get a chance to respond because of stuff. But after the whole thing in Vancouver, the Temple of Satan, is it out here?
The Satanic Temple of Seattle.
The Satanic Temple of Seattle. Boy, that just rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it? they tried to get a sign of their own put up down in Vancouver, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah, it's a really nice sign too.
So you're going to be talking about Thomas Jefferson tomorrow because, hey, luck. But also, what other kind of stuff do you intend on talking about?
My message is more about unity and working together, because I think that's what our government needs to do in order to be successful. So that's really what my whole message is.
Well, Ed, do you have any specific things that you want to share with us about what's coming up? I assume it's written already.
Oh, yeah, it's been written for some time. I mean, I've had almost a year to prepare for this. So. Right.
Not that we've been.
I think I've revised it.
Yeah. So, yes.
Oh, sorry. If you want, I could read some of it.
Yeah,
you
know, give us a sample. Some of it. Yeah, I wouldn't mind. Wouldn't mind having a little bit of a sample.
All right. I would like to open this invocation by asking everyone: look around you, beside you, in front of you, and behind you, is a person that, in so many ways, the same as you. We may have different backgrounds and beliefs, but we may come from different ethnicity and religions. When it comes down to it, we're all sharing the same speck of dust floating through the vast and wondrous universe. So that's just the opening paragraph there.
I like it.
Nice. Going small to really big.
I
like the perspective.
Yeah. Scale is good.
Yeah.
So the other thing is, I'm pretty sure legislatures just don't let somebody with something to say come in and say, I think God is nice. Go pass laws. You got this. You're basically in because you are a humanist celebrant, correct?
Correct.
All right. So we've mentioned that a few times on the show, but can you give us sort of a package idea of what that actually means?
So a humanist celebrant is basically a clergy level humanist. Well, it's just below clergy level, more like lay clergy. In order to be clergy level, you'd have to be a humanist chaplain. But we are legally able to marry. We can do funerals, naming ceremonies, things like that. Our primary purpose is to not necessarily spread humanism, but be able to promote the message of humanism to the masses.
Cool. So I already can anticipate a question I'm going to get. You are considered a type of clergy for humanists, but when people think clergy, they tend to think hierarchy and some sort of authority.
Right.
That's not the case here, correct?
That is correct. There is no real hierarchy or authority to humanism. We just are, and this gives us, it gives us a title that we can use. It's basically what it is. Most of us are already doing this to a point, and this just allows us a title to work with government, is mostly what it is.
Okay, that makes sense. So we've been doing some research here, and there's a document that suggested in 22 chambers around the country, the Senate or the House chaplain receives some sort of compensation, like a salary or a per diem or some sort of mileage reimbursement. But the Washington Senate, however, the compensation provided for the chaplain goes directly to the Ministerial Association. Is that happening here? And if so, where's the compensation going?
This is actually the first time I've heard of that. So it's obviously not going to me.
Uh-oh.
No, I have to look into that and see where this compensation is going. That's a very valid point.
Yeah, I believe Becky dug that up. There is a link in the show notes. I will post that, and I will send that to you.
Excellent.
So, do we know? So it's tomorrow. It's at 10 a.m. Is there any other thing, any sort of other thing, sort of going on with it, or any events afterwards for humanists and atheists to get together and talk about it? Or
I haven't planned anything afterwards. But if we decide to get together and, you know, have a cup of coffee or something afterwards, that'd be great. If someone else wanted to plan that, that'd be wonderful.
I imagine those things tend to emerge from themselves.
I felt that would be somewhat organic and it would just happen. So.
Well, go ahead.
The other thing is, if you can't be there to watch it, you can watch it on tvw.org, which is the Washington State streaming service.
All right. So I will put a link to that up on the website when the show goes live, and you can go right there, and all the links that you'll need to see will be right there. Robert Ray, you're the president of Humanists of North Puget Sound, correct?
That is correct.
Yes, also on the board of Humanists of Washington. If there's a group in Washington State, he's involved with it. He's also a humanist celebrant, and he's giving an invocation at the State House tomorrow at 10 a.m. in Olympia, Washington. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Sam.
And a big congratulations, Robert. It's really exciting that you're getting to do this.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Dave.
This is a big win.
Yeah, this is.
You're my hero.
This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we are going to have a moment of science about a subject very near and dear to my heart.
Thank you.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
48 hours. 24 hours. 10 minutes to go.
Now it's hard to see. My God, the rain is, it's coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee. ANNEX Radio.com. Now on iTunes and Stitcher.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And as I said before, we are now a moment of science about something that's very important to me.
Thanks, Sam. Today's moment of science is about the microbes that humans use to make good stuff. First, let's look at some of our favorite foods and the microbes that help us produce them. So, I'm a big fan of yogurt with breakfast. And like many other dairy products, yogurt is produced by the fermentation of dairy milk by lactobacillus and streptococcus bacteria. These useful little friends consume lactose, the natural sugar in milk, and produce lactic acid. This acid acts on the proteins in milk to create the texture and the tang of yogurt. Cheese, of course, is another product produced with the help of bacteria and fungi along similar lines. There are hundreds of varieties of cheeses, and as you might expect, hundreds of different microbe species used in their production for different colors, textures, flavors, and aromas. One of the most interesting, though, is the aroma of Limburger cheese. It's probably the most famous, often used as a prank or a weapon in cartoons like Looney Tunes. But why should this particular cheese have such a pungent and familiar stink? Well, as it turns out, the smell of Limburger is produced by a bacteria called Brevibacterium linens, the same bacteria that causes smelly socks and BO. What possessed someone to smear it all over a developing cheese is anyone's guess. But it's hard to deny its popularity among connoisseurs of fine cheeses or vengeance-seeking cartoon mice. Salami is another one of my favorite foods and relies on microbes as well, not just for its flavor, but for its shelf life. A bacterial culture on the inside produces lactic acid to lower the pH of the salami and to prevent the growth of pathogens. And an edible mold called penicillium on the outside of the salami helps to dry the meat and prevent it from spoiling. If you're a fan of Asian cuisine, you've probably used soy sauce. Traditionally, its unique flavor is a result of fermentation using a type of mold called aspergillus. It also uses bacillus and lactobacillus bacteria and a yeast called Saccharomyces cerevisiae, which is very dear to Sam's heart. That's a pretty complex cocktail there, but each microbe contributes particular compounds to the mix, and they can even use each other's products to create larger and more complicated molecules that they can't produce on their own. Of course, anyone who's done any serious baking is already familiar with one of the soy sauce microbes, whether they know it or not. Saccharomyces cerevisiae is the same yeast species that is used in baking bread. And as that yeast consumes the carbohydrates present in bread dough, it produces CO2, or carbon dioxide, as waste. The CO2 is what causes the bread to rise and become light and spongy. And that very same yeast, one of our most useful microbes, is also responsible for one of humanity's and Sam's favorite microbial waste products, ethanol, which you may know as drinking alcohol. In the production of beer, Saccharomyces cerevisiae is called a top fermenting or ale yeast, while its very close cousin, Saccharomyces pastorianus, is what we call a bottom fermenting or lager yeast. Both yeasts consume carbohydrates and produce ethanol and CO2, which give beer its intoxicating properties and its fizziness, respectively. Now, beer, cheese, and soy sauce might not make Conan's list of what is greatest in life, but they've certainly helped humanity out by allowing us to preserve and sanitize our foods before refrigeration and global economies made them available all year. Could our civilization have survived so many winters, disasters, and ice ages without our microbial friends? Well, maybe not. But who needs them now, right? Well, for one, diabetics. As you probably already know, diabetes often requires insulin treatment. Almost 400 million people in the world have diabetes, which requires huge amounts of insulin for treatment. Insulin is a very complex protein and is not easy to synthesize, but thankfully we have some help with this one. In 1978, a team of scientists and genetic engineers were able to genetically modify E. coli bacteria to produce human insulin. There's no telling exactly how many lives have been saved since then by these microscopic helpers, happily chowing down their starches and producing life-saving medicine in return. But that's all stuff in the past. Let's talk about the future. How can microbes help us in new ways to survive into the next century? Well, one very promising technology is microbial fuel cells. The idea of using microbes to generate electricity has actually been around since 1911, but has largely been ignored by industrial power providers as an alternative energy source. But more recently, the University of Queensland, Australia, and Foster's Brewing Company, whom you may remember from the Foster's Australian for Beer ads, came up with a successful prototype that uses bacteria fed by brewery wastewater to produce electricity. In the process, these bacteria also clean and purify the wastewater. Plans are already in effect to construct a larger 660-liter model of this fuel cell that's expected to turn out 2 kilowatts of electricity, which is enough to power the average home. The electricity sounds really great, but we certainly have plenty of alternative energy solutions that work very well already, and in fact are a little bit more efficient. But none of them also produce fresh water. In this overpopulated world, fresh water is rapidly becoming scarce, but give our microbes some sugary waste and voila, no more Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. So if you like surviving through the winters of the past and into the future, why not treat yourself to a grilled cheese sandwich, some salami, and a beer? Thank a microbe.
Fantastic. If you would like to have a science question answered for you, you can give us a call at 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. Leave us a voicemail message or click on the shiny red button and it'll take you right to us, and you can have your topic addressed with a moment of science.
And if you have any questions about the creative uses of Saccharomyces cerevisiae or Pastorianus, please ask Sam.
Well, I'm not the only one in the room who does that. I have been often accused of having a microbiotic diet. I like cheese, I like beer, and I love vinegar. I actually have a vinegar collection. And sometimes I even make vinegar on accident. yeah, I got a Acetobacter invaded something in my brewery, which I would complain, but I wasn't really fond of what was in the fermenter, and it's actually turning into really nice vinegar. So I'm kind of okay with it. I just have to kill the whole brewery with fire.
Right.
Because once you get that stuff in your brewery, it's very hard to get rid of, and suddenly every beer you make is a sour beer. I actually have a question about evolution and yeast specifically. Is you get like really specialized yeast these days. You know, like starting with like the dry yeast, like I'm a big fan of Pasteur Champagne for ciders and for weird projects. The sweet mead yeast, the yeast that they use with unfiltered wheat beers that create an ester chain that tastes almost exactly like banana bread. And then you've got like Rogue Pac-Man, which can attenuate to like 20% ABV. That's more alcohol than beer should have, by the way.
Right, yeah.
It's all one species.
It's all one species, and it's different strains. You can think of yeast as probably our first domesticated organism. It's really sort of a toss-up in the archaeological evidence whether it was dogs or yeast that we domesticated first.
Right.
But we have actual drawings of breweries in Egyptian ruins.
Yeah.
That date back 4,000 years. That people were clearly already using this.
Right.
This microorganism before they even knew it was a microorganism. They just knew that if you provided these sort of conditions, they didn't have the chemical knowledge of things like pH and the minerals that they were putting in the water, but they knew that if you create these conditions, then you get this kind of an alcohol or this kind of a bread coming back out of it. And what they were really doing was artificial selection on the yeast. Just the same way that we started with wolves and did artificial selection to create these numerous breeds of dogs. So when you're talking about these Pac-Mans that can go up to ridiculous alcohol contents, you know, you're looking at the Great Danes here. they're very powerful, but not very efficient. And when you're looking at baking yeasts, again, the same species, they tend to have less tolerance for an alcohol concentration, but they work much, much faster. So they're kind of like the chihuahuas of the breed. They can't take a hit, but man, can they run around in circles.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. You kind of put me off my game for a minute there, because that was a Conan the Barbarian reference in there, right?
It was a Conan the Barbarian reference, yes.
I was going to say, if beer is not on his list of, what is it?
Is greatest in life?
Then his list is wrong.
That's what I was thinking. While I was putting together that paragraph, I was like, oh, beer, cheese, salami, that would be like in my top five or six things. Like, and so it just kind of got me thinking about, you know, Conan and crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and Mike Gillis knows the rest of it.
and you give him any opportunity,
right?
And yeah, he'll do the whole bit. It's funny because the brewing thing actually is a artifact of my days in the New Age movement.
Really?
That was when I first picked it up. But I've never had any trouble finding a homebrewer in the atheism community. Every time I've mentioned homebrewing on the air or in a group of people, I can usually find somebody to talk turkey with for a while, and it's kind of neat. In fact, Ben Blanchard mentioned that to me, and we actually created a Facebook group for me called Origin of the Yeasties, specifically for homebrewing atheists. And I'd love to do something with that, but frankly, time.
Right, yeah.
But I would love to do something with that. Because he does a cooking column in one of the magazines. I cannot remember which one right now. But he did Atheists Who Cook, which is also something I'm into. But I have way, way too many hobbies.
I wonder if that has anything to do with if there's like a correlation or even a causation here that the sorts of people who become atheists or maybe those who want to learn a little bit more about stuff.
Yeah.
Those that are just sort of naturally curious. And it might be, you know, you're sitting back drinking beer and being like, I wonder how this great thing is made.
Right.
I wonder
if
I could make this great thing. And you know, I would say my brewing is kind of an artifact left over from medieval reenactment.
Right. But, well, you know, in the Venn diagram, that's almost a ball bearing. New Age and the Skadians.
New Age and Skadians, it's true. It's true. I was actually thinking earlier, like, our comments, all religions are the same. It's going to be like, oh, man, I know this guy from the SCA. And he's going to be like, hey, dude. That's not cool.
but I do know, like I said, it's not what they are right now. It's in the proper environment, I think, is it for me. But I know some New Agers who I could describe as exactly like that right now.
Wow.
If you consider some of the Northern European variants, I think you might know where I'm going with this one.
Are we talking about the same guy?
We are now.
Hey, man, we mentioned you on the show.
You'll love it. Listen to it. It's right at the end. Now, I was actually thinking of some folks back home who I may get it in the neck for later. But, it's... I think part of it is the science of it. Because it's science that makes you drunk. How awesome is that?
Right?
it's like Breaking Bad, but nobody gets shot. It's fantastic.
All the fun of a chemistry lab and all the note-taking of also a chemistry lab.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. Brewing for me and for a bunch of other people that I've talked to, especially if they're really bitheads, is it's their one hobby that they don't use computers for. Like, yeah. I know guys who've come up who have used like Arduinos and stuff and microcontrollers to build automatic brewing gear, and that stuff is fantastic when I've seen it. But I want, this is my analog hobby. This is the hobby where I actually take, you know, 6 gallon big jugs full of stuff and dump it into other things and pretend like I'm actually strong for 2 minutes. and I know a lot of people who feel that way about it. So there's science to it, but there's also a lot of history, because apparently, from if you look at U.S. history, apparently beer is the most terrifying substance ever generated, with plutonium a distant second.
Right.
Which is weird.
I mean, even the yeast Pastorianus, C. Pastorianus, the lager yeast cousin of the ale yeast that is used for almost everything else, it's the reason that large-scale refrigeration was invented, because lagers became popular in the United States, and you couldn't make them in the summer.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wow, lagering. That's a hard one. I tend to stick to very easy-to-make things, because I'm lazy. refrigerating beer made refrigeration happen.
Pretty much, yeah. Large-scale refrigeration, yeah. Industrial refrigeration, as we know it, was made for lager.
I have heard, and I don't have
sadly American lager in the 40s. So
I don't have a source for this, but I have heard that actually it was the invention of beer that drove humans to switch from hunter gatherer to agriculture, because you can't make beer as a hunter gatherer culture.
I've heard that hypothesized. Yeah, it would be hard to gather all the grain you need.
I don't know if you ever hung out with hunters, but boy, do they like beer.
And they like beer.
That's a fact.
And if
they had to give up one.
if you had to pick.
And the thing is, if you could think of single change in human society, the shift to agriculture and, you know, being tied to the land instead of nomadic existence, is one of, if not the biggest shift in human history, which means beer is one of the biggest catalysts for humanity.
That's kind of sad.
No, that's kind of awesome.
I think that's really kind of human.
It is. Yeah. It is.
We go nuts for weird stuff.
We do. And I'm the worst of the lot. But but just to find out that, yeah, this substance that I make and causes me trouble sometimes, but I also like spend a lot of time on, it's just not me. It's like human civilization is driven on beer, not on brotherhood, not on love, not on knowledge, not on science, not on beer.
Yeah, it's beer.
Beer,
yeah.
And stabbing things.
Beer, 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 totally beer, beer, beer.
So that's like a brief summary of the draw of the SCA, actually.
Beer and stabbing things.
Beer and stabbing things. Also, yeah. Corsets.
Which
beer,
also,
stabbing things, and corsets.
Corsets is kind of a subset of stabbing things, if you think about it for a minute.
Ooh. Can you say that on the radio?
Well, no. Sometimes a whalebone gets all pointy.
Oh, okay.
Where are you thinking? I gotta think of something to change the subject. Oh, right, Mimolette. I really like Mimolette. I think I'm rare, like cheese. I like weird cheese. I like cheese that has things that should not be in cheese.
What is in Mimolette that should not be in cheese?
Mites, cheese mites.
Whoa!
It's kind of like a cheddar, but they make a wheel of it. It's a hard cheese, and then they let these specialized mites sort of infest it and create cheese dandruff on the outside. A lot of people eat the rind. I'm not one of them. But it does, it, like, enzymes and weird stuff happens to the cheese, and it makes a really interesting nutty flavor. I actually quite like it. I just try very, as the delicate flower that I am, I try very hard not to think about how this cheese was made, or try very hard not to think much about cheese, how cheese is made at all. On the other hand, didn't mention yogurt.
I did mention yogurt.
Oh, you did mention yogurt.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
My memory is very short today.
That was the first one. Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay.
I actually really like yogurt. Yogurt's my like breakfast almost every morning.
In my house when I was growing up, sour cream was a condiment much like ketchup and used in mm-hmm. about the same volume. Not particularly healthy, if you're familiar.
No, it's not particularly healthy. But it, you know, I don't know. One of my favorite desserts is a sour cream one where you take strawberries. Like you know, fresh strawberries, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You dip them in sour cream, and then you dip them again in brown sugar and eat that. And it's amazingly delicious, but you can feel your arteries hardening as it goes. Yeah.
I've almost entirely replaced sour cream with yogurt in my diet. It's hard when you're like making, like I make a chicken paprikash and a beef stroganoff with yogurt. Mm-hmm. Got to be careful with it because yogurt gets grainy really easy. So yeah. Yeah, you got to make a cornstarch slurry. Actually, these days, it's usually not me that's making it, sadly. I'm done with the studio. I can start cooking again. You can tell I'm already thinking about it. I like this cooking thing. I do like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't like dairy products, and so...
Brewing, cooking. Well, the yogurt's the good one.
I don't like yogurt either.
Oh, you just don't like it. Okay.
Yeah, this is not a lactose intolerance thing, or...
What about nachos?
No.
Wow.
It's chips with a bunch of cheese on them. That's gross.
Well, that's all the time we've got today.
I'm stunned.
You can go to askanatheist.tv, leave us a voicemail at 844-753-7842. Toll-free nationwide. You can go to email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. My brain is all over the place. I have a lot of people to thank. I'll figure out how to thank them later. See you guys.
You're welcome, Sam.
Yes. See you guys next week.